Welcome to The Convo. I am your host, Lakeisha Mosley. I'm a mom, a blogger, a brand influencer, and the event producer of my own event management company called The LM Experience. On The Convo, you'll hear conversations with some of the most profound entrepreneurs from all over the world as they share with us their wins and their losses. They'll also share tips and tricks with you that will help you be successful along this journey called entrepreneurship. Let's get started with the show. This episode is sponsored by The LM Experience. COVID-19 has really wrecked the event industry, as well as it has affected businesses and companies that normally have in-person events. But I have a solution for you. It's called virtual events. And I know you've already heard about them, but you may be wondering if it's something that you should do. Well, I have a gift for you. I have a checklist of 8 things that you should consider before you plan your next virtual event. It's really easy to get. Just visit bit.ly/VECKLIST. Again, that's bit.ly/VECKLIST. Jabari and Stephanie Walthour are proud 2005 graduates of North Carolina's A&T. They currently reside outside of Atlanta, Georgia, where Stephanie practices marriage, family, and sex therapy as the sole owner of the Intimacy Center of Georgia. Jabari continues to build upon a career that has included stints at Fortune 500 companies such as General Electric, Lockheed Martin, and most recently Amazon, where he is a global leader in their global specialty fulfillment business. Although they have demanding careers, which require constant commitment to excellence, there is nothing more important to them than loving and nurturing their 2 sons, BJ and Stefan. They pride themselves on family, faith, and friendship. And they strongly believe the friendships made while at A&T anchored in their memberships of the Alpha Phi Alpha and Alpha Kappa Alpha not only supported them throughout their successes, but many challenges they have faced in life. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Convo with Keisha. On today, I got my good friend Stephanie and Jabari joining me on the show. Welcome, guys.
Hey, what's up?
We appreciate you. I'm so happy to talk with y'all. Like, I know y'all got good stuff. I just know y'all got good stuff. We're excited. But wait, you know, I always get too excited. I want y'all to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I'll start. Well, I am Stephanie Walthour. I am from Charlotte, North Carolina, but currently live in Atlanta, Georgia with my husband and my 2 beautiful boys. I am a marriage, family, and sex therapist. I am known as the dope sex therapist on IG. I love my job. I love what I'm able to do. People always look at me like, Stephanie, a sex therapist? Because I was so quirky and lame and just no, like, churchy girl. But I realized in working in relationships and working with marriages, one of the main issues was sex. And so we are so ashamed about it. And so going through some stuff, I just realized I didn't want to be shameful no more about it. And I wanted to talk about it. So you'll hear me talk a lot about sex. You hear me talk a lot about relationships and mental health. And I'm just a big advocate for it. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Yeah, so I'm nowhere near as cool as my wife.
Oh.
No, so I'm Jabari Walthour. Currently work for Amazon, supporting their global specialty fulfillment business. Been over there almost a year. Had about a 15-year career now. Mostly spent time doing government consulting. Mm-hmm. So spent a lot of time at Booz Allen Hamilton. Consulting the Air Force, just really having a real, you know, great career. I can't complain about anything. I mean, I've just taken the right stepping stones. And I really just want to talk to you guys just about how A&T prepared me for that. And all the various relationships that we built, you know, to get here.
Right. I love it. I love it. Y'all both dope. Don't do that, Jabari. You just, as my sister is. Okay. You just dope. And I am so excited for us to definitely talk about that. I just really love chatting with friends who attended HBCUs. I have to admit, I did not. I started at one. I started at Southern University in Baton Rouge. And then I got pregnant and my mom was like, you finna come home. Mm-hmm. You gotta come to the house. And so I'm from Alexandria, Louisiana. So okay. I went back home and then I finished my studies at Northwestern State University. Okay. But what I have found is that I think I got a really good education, but I do feel like I missed out on that unity part that I'm noticing as I talk to my friends that have attended HBCUs, you know, that I missed out on that. So share with the listeners, you know, why your HBCU is important. Like, why is that so important for us to attend schools like that?
I think it's just having the opportunity to be around such rich Black culture, being able to feed off of that. I often brag about, you know, the 4 years being there and not having to worry about racism in America, or just not even that being a secondary thought of ours. It's just, it's so much easier when you just remove all those components. Right. And you kind of focus on building your relationships with your friends. That's going to extend far past college, and just focus on getting your education and getting out. I mean, I just think it means a lot to be able to see your own people and revel in all that Black excellence.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I agree.
I agree. I love that. I love that. I shared with, you know, mutual friends of ours, you know, Ali and Nakia, about the fact that I never understood the importance of that until a few years ago. I have been one to where I've always been brought into circles and I've always been brought to tables by our non-Black counterparts. So I've never really had to, in a sense, like really fight my way into a room or prove so much as to who or what I am. You know, I've never had to really do that so much because I've always been invited into spaces where we traditionally may not be, but I came there because I was a friend or I was, you know, associated with someone else. But when I think about my schooling from Northwestern State University, other than maybe my Black friends that I went to school with, like, I don't talk to none of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, what you just talked about, Jabari, I don't have from my time at Northwestern State University. And I was sharing with Nikki and Ali that part of that I felt like was missing. You know, I hear people all the time talk about their college friends and I'm like, oh, well, I don't know who she is. Or, you know, I don't know who that is. So I really think that's important when you brought that up to say, we're still friends, we still cool, like we still rock with each other even after college.
Oh yeah.
I think it's beyond just even that. Like, they are our life now. Right. You know, with the with this book experience and kind of writing and being contributing authors, that's one of the main things that we just realized, like, our life, you know, is just so blessed because of the people that we have in it. And sure, majority of them came from A&T. You know, just a lot of our experiences that we have had, good and bad, they have been there. I mean, and just beyond what you can ever imagine. Like, you know, your mama, your daddy, your sister, your brother, they're going to be there, you know, and thank God for them too. But our friends, we can't even call them friends anymore. I mean,
they're family.
Right. I mean, you're talking about alarm codes to each other house, you know, God, each other kids, passcodes to phones, you know, like if something happened, you know who to call.
You know, bail money
account.
Right. Right. You can't say that one out loud. You can't say that. But yeah, like I just couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine.
Right. Yeah, it's a different vibe. It's a totally different vibe. And, you know, I was discussing that with, you know, I try to be politically correct. One of my little pink friends, you know, I tried to discuss that with them. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, maybe it was because you didn't live on campus. Mm. And I was like, well, no. Okay. I just didn't relate to y'all. Like, y'all didn't look like me. So... Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's what it is. So I think that's super cool that it forges relationships from even during that time to hereafter. So let's talk about attending. Why would you encourage someone who, like, you know, although COVID just didn't messed up everything, but those who are contemplating going to college and they're in between, you know, a HBCU and a white college, you know, why would you encourage them to attend that HBCU?
My girlfriend, Jocelyn, she is in this book as well. And she was just talking about how the care and the love that the people have there for you. Now, let's be clear. We're not necessarily even just talking about your peers. You know, right. You know they got your back. But when your professors, when your deans, when your mentors, I mean, some of the stuff that they did for us, we've been dealing with kind of this, you know, the stuff with the Black movement and Black Lives Matter and police brutality. Jabari brought up to me that I actually experienced this while I was at A&T, and I never even put the two together. I was arrested my freshman year of college, and it's a funny story now that I can tell, but to one of my friend's house, and this was, I don't know if you remember this, Keisha, but this was so like 2001. This is when the people were riding in unmarked cars and, you know, pulling you over and, you know. So my dad had always told me, get to a lit place, don't pull over, you know, yada, yada, yada. So a car got behind me. Now, let me be clear. I was speeding, so I was wrong, okay? But the car got behind me, tried to pull me over. I put my blinker lights on, which is what they told us to do. I slowed all the way down, and I drove until I got to this lit space, which happened to be my friend's house. About time I got there, do you know, it was five cops behind me, pulled me. out, slammed me on the car, like hit me in the face. I mean, all kinds of stuff. Put me in, like took me to a holding cell, everything.
But tell them about who stepped in.
Though. Yeah, who stepped in. But, you know, that's, I'm just.
Right, that's like, my bro right there.
And at this point, me and him are just best friends. We're just friends. Right. This freshman year. So that night when I got out, he was the first person I called. And he came to my dorm. I stayed in Curtis Hall. He came to my dorm and sat on the stoop with me while I cried. Now, but listen to this story. That next morning, I went to Dean Brown. He was like the dean of a gospel choir or something. And I'm telling them what happened. And I'm just crying, you know. Do you know that man put me in his car and took me to the police station to file a thing against this police officer? I didn't know what to do. I didn't know to do that. But it is those type of examples, and we have plenty of them, not getting locked up, but those type of examples of the people that stepped in when your mom and dad wasn't there, you know, to say, no, we're going to go handle this. No one has that right to treat you that way. You know, her professors cooking for you. I mean, just so much it's just so rich in love, you know, it's already rich in culture and excellence, but the love that you feel while you're there, I just can't even describe it.
Yeah, I'll answer the question from someone who actually had that dilemma of whether or not to attend a PWI or HBCU.
Right.
So I was committed to Georgia Tech my entire senior year. Was going to follow in my dad's footsteps and pretty much, you know, do the electrical engineering thing just like he did at Georgia Tech. It wasn't until I went to a campus visit at Georgia Tech and was like, oh man, I don't really see too much of anything that looks like me. I mean, who's on the test, you know, who's gonna be easily, you know, befriended, you know, or who's gonna make this a much better experience? So came home, double thought that decision. I said, man, let me reconsider A&T. It was on my list. So we took a late visit, like June. We go up to A&T. And we ride by the student union. Oh man, it immediately feels like home. I said, oh yeah, this looked like somewhere I can fit in. You know, like I said, it was just so rich in Black culture.
Right.
And there was also just this thought in my head about the great black minds, man. I felt like at the time I was graduating near the top of my class, and you know, you're always kind of pushed to like, hey, go out there and go be and be the best, you know, that you can be. And you associate whiteness with being the best you can be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so, and that happens so common. And we don't realize how brainwashed we are with that thought.
Exactly.
But, you know, I had a last minute thought on, man, what if all the great black minds went to the great black institutions? I mean, just how much better would they be?
Exactly.
And you know, that was just arrogance, you know, in me. And then when I got there and realized, man, all the black minds that were surrounding me, it was just, man, it took it to a whole nother level. And you realize, oh, man, you ain't that smart. You know, it's a bunch of you.
You know what I'm saying? Get you being top of your class. I'm top of my class.
Yeah, it's a bunch of you. So once you get there and you get over that, you know, you're like, oh, man, this going to be great. This going to be a great 4 years right here. So.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Like, I just think back to how, you know, when I had my time at Northwestern, like, it was, if you showed up, you showed up. If you didn't, you didn't. We got your money, and, you know, it's all good. And
had that professor call your phone, like, where you at?
Yes, didn't have that. Yeah, didn't have that, you know, when you think about the whole totality of it. And also, when you think about everything that kind of, like, that just goes on, in the world, how we relate certain things to certain things, like Jabari just said. Well, I had a panel discussion last night with some PR and media reps, and the first thing they brought up, y'all, which I hadn't even thought about, was when we come to the table, it ain't even about us trying to get the brand message out. We're trying to convince them that black is what you need at your table. And I'm like, wait a minute, y'all done blew my mind. Cause I'm here to talk to y'all about how we gonna get, how does the messaging get out?
Right. We can't even get
work. Yes, I got to even show you why I'm worthy to put your message out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're right.
It's scary. And you're right, we don't relate that. I was one of those. Let me tell you, my daughter, when she graduated from high school, and she was getting ready to go to TSU here in Houston, I was like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, why would you want to go there? Why don't you go across the way, you know, to U of H? And she was like, no, I want to go to U of H. I mean, I want to go to TSU. And I was like, oh, God, like, what kind of nightmare would this be? So, I was like, I really had to come to grips with myself and be like, you know, if you have that attitude about a school that's rich in your culture, why do you think other people have it as well? And especially if you make an impact, especially if you're someone who has a platform that you can speak on, if you have that mentality, of course other people will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Keisha, I think that's just one of the dope things about this book, because it really lets everyone see how amazing HBCUs are. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily just from the culture standpoint. I mean, really look at A&T. Like, look at the caliber of people that this school is producing.
Right.
You know, like, you have people that's sitting right at that same boardroom with Ivy League, you know, graduates. Mm-hmm. Like, we are going in those same places. We are eating the same way. Like, mm-hmm. And I think that's the message that we really are trying to project. It's not just, I just want to go here to be around black people. No, our school is just as amazing, just as challenging. The information that we're getting is just as good, just as great. They're preparing us probably 10 times better than maybe some of these other schools.
Right.
That's the thing. And especially, like, so I say from A&T, being from North Carolina, I was just talking to my cousin about this the other day. She's a senior in high school. And I was like, well, what about A&T? And she was like, And I was like, you know what? I know what that looks like. Because being from Charlotte, you think that A&T is the party school. And the only people that go to A&T is people that can't get in nowhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Girl,
mm-hmm.
I was like, do you know they actually decline people? You know, as a state school, maybe now we're like, okay, but I mean, the way listening to Jabari and, you know, some of the other, our other friends from DC and Atlanta, like, no, the application process to get into that school and to get money is just as strenuous.
Right.
You know, and so I think that's the message that we're really trying to get out to people. Like, please don't think that this is just this gravy train, because it's not. Now, I will tell you, Auntie may give you a chance. They may give that kid that didn't have the best GPA, they may give you a chance. But let me tell you something, sis, don't get it right by second semester.
Hello?
We're going to call you back. We're going to call you back. We're going to call you back.
Yeah. You will be at home, boo-boo. You will be at home.
We gave not you a chance, here. Sis, we gave you a chance. You wanted
exactly.
to come.
You know, the books are the same at all these institutions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think people don't really take that into account. It's like, hey, man, we're getting the same knowledge. You know, 2 + 2 at A&T is the same as 2 + 2 at Harvard. Right. So it's all right. Now, what varies from institution to institution? You know, I look at A&T and I go, hey, I got a frat out of A&T. I got a wife out of A&T. And if you really want to go a step further, I got 2 boys. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? My relationships with my wife, A&T. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's so many other things that go into it that I don't think we all often consider.
That's true. Like the whole, like I said, the whole package that comes with it is just so much that you can definitely be grateful for. And you can be like, and because of this HBCU, this is why. And because of this HBCU, you know, when you think about it, let's look at our candidate for vice presidency.
Mm.
Okay.
Come on, Kamala.
Don't you get in his ski win. Come on.
Biden Harris 20.
Don't you make it? Don't you pull it out?
You know, I'm going to leave it in there, sis. I'm going to leave it in there.
Okay, then leave it in there.
But yeah, you're right. Like, look at the greatness that comes out of that. And it's a shame. I will say this, y'all. It's a shame that we have to really pull out those cards and say, okay, look at Stephanie and Jabari. Look what they have accomplished. You know, and they come from an HBCU. It should all be automatically. When somebody says HBCU, we should automatically think greatness. We should automatically think that's the best of the best, like we do when someone says Harvard or Yale.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I hope that's what we'll get to. I really hope that's what we'll get to. I hope
exactly. that
the trajectory that these HBCUs are on. I think that's why we are so behind, you know, Kamala too. Like, hey, y'all, this is the HBCU thing. Forget it being a thing. Nah, this all of us. That's an HBCU grad. That's a Divine Nine. Like,
exactly.
All of us. She represents all of us. So,
We're definitely there. And I love that. And you know, on a side note, you know, I was talking to Nakia and Ali, and I was like, listen, we all got these platforms. You know, it ain't nothing for me to throw together a panel discussion about HBCUs and why.
Call me, sis. You got the number.
Hey. You already know. I'm going to just put that out there because, again.
You got the number.
Exactly. Because I'm like, we need to really be sharing it. So I really, really love y'all being very candid about, you know, the HBCU experience and how that is. So now I'm going to get in your business, Stephanie. And Jabari, probably your business, too. So, sex therapy. That sounds very interesting to me.
Sit back and sip my tea.
So tell us, what is a sex therapist? Because I know people, their minds are already over there. We need y'all to come on back over here, boo, so my sis can tell you what that really is.
Yeah, come back to just a classroom, like at A&T.
Right.
Come back to a master's degree. Come back to a doctorate. That's what it is. It is a degree. We are not in here touching on each other, feeling on each other, rubbing on each other. No. Keep your clothes on. Okay. And you sit on that side. I sit on this side. But it really is it's another discipline under the mental health profession and umbrella. So like I said, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health therapist. This is just another certificate. So it's just another place where I specialize. Honestly, and I always say this, and it's always make people back up, but honestly, Keish, I really work with a lot of clients that have been abused, raped, molested, and have very unhealthy sexual practices at this point. And so you have to think about that part of it. You know, yes, I can work in the marriages and help people with infidelity and how to spice up their relationship and you know, different things like that. But a lot of our work is that a lot of us have very unhealthy sexual relationships, and whatever it started from. So was it from some type of abuse, or was it from some principles and things that we learned very early on that has way of thinking? You know, for me, I came up in a very Christian household, you know, in a very Christ-like family. And so some of the things that I learned about
sex, wrong with that.
I know, right. But one of the things that I learned was sex. You don't have sex, don't have sex, don't have sex, don't have sex. Right. And then when you got married, it was sex, sex, sex. And it was like, okay, wait a minute, y'all. Like, I need a like balance. Like, Jesus, tell me what to do here. And so really just helping, it's sometimes helping women kind of figure out that balance. Helping them figure out how to enjoy sex, you know, how to enjoy my own body. What the hell do I like, you know?
Right.
So that's another big part of it. But I love it. I love talking about it. I don't think we talk about it enough. I think it's a very shamed conversation. And I think it's something that we need to start talking about with our children very early on so that we're not shamed about it.
Exactly. I absolutely love that. And that's why I'm so glad you went that route. Because a lot of people, they think, oh, well, all she does is help people in their marriages get their sex life together. And, oh, you know, is this? No, it's some people, including myself, who have had very unhealthy sexual relationships. My mama, my dad was a preacher. Okay, so I'm PK. You already know how that is, number one, right?
Yeah.
My mom, y'all, she had me so scared to have sex, you know, and I knew what she was doing. I understood what she wanted. You know, she had me, you know, at 20, you know, and, you know, she felt like she didn't get to finish some things, or she didn't really want that for me. So when I had my daughter at 20, she was adamant about, you're going back to school, you're going to finish that. But it was unhealthy stuff. She was like, girl, if you have sex, you gonna die. Like, don't even do it.
It's death. No, it's and death.
Like, you gonna die. And then my dad over here with the fire and brimstone, you know, about, you know, having sex. And so it's unhealthy. And then, like you say, you get into a relationship and he like, well, damn, can I rest? I mean, what is it? Like, what's going on?
With a lot of clients, and we think about, and I don't know if you've heard this term, vaginismus. And so that is where the vaginal walls won't open. And so, but a lot of it goes back, once we have medically cleared you, that is anxiety, Keisha. And so that is my body, and I have been taught for 20 years that this is gonna hurt, you're gonna die, you're going to hell, yada, yada, yada. And all of that is playing in my mind while I'm laying here with trying to be intimate with my partner, and my walls won't open, literally. And so it's a very physical and real thing. A lot of us have experienced anxiety attacks. A lot of us have experienced when our heart is beating fast. A lot of us have experienced soaking wet with sweat when we're pissed and we're angry. Right. So you see how your body physically responds in those moments? We have women that their body physically responds in that moment when it's time for them to be intimate. They can't. Because of the things that have been said, because of the things that they have experienced. That goes even with orgasm. And I'm not sure if this is a PG-13.
No, ma'am, we keep it 100.
Okay. Keep it all the way raw,
But right?
Orgasm. You have a lot of women that say, I can't orgasm, or I don't know how. That can be linked to our anxiety. What have we been talking? And that's traumatic. That's trauma. And then now we're in this society where everything is over-sexualized, and you should be doing, you should be doing that. You should look like this. You should feel like that. I should be busting a nut with my partner, you know, like porn stars, all this kind of stuff. And when I can't perform that way, guess what? That's traumatic to me. Exactly. And I don't know how to deal with that. And so that all of that just kind of loops around to what we do within sex therapy. Keisha, you hit this on the head. You said, you know, when you're laying there with your partner, or she's just working with partners and she's working in this marriage, the biggest to help them have a better sexual life, the biggest thing with that is communication.
Right.
Talking to your partner, knowing how to talk to your partner, knowing what the hell to say, because a lot of times we don't know what to say.
We don't.
Know? I don't know how to tell you to please me because I don't know how to please myself. I don't know what I'm doing, you know? So that's a lot of what sex therapy is. That's what I do in my practice alongside of mental health and marriage and family therapy. I will tell you, half of my clients is just normal mental health and marriage and family therapy, you right. know? And then I would say the other 40 to 30%, you know, are sex therapy. But a lot of those marriage clients typically have some sex things that we can all improve on, right? None of us are perfect. We can all improve. We can all always call it giving you just a little bit of tools to put in your toolbox right. to use. That's it.
We'll be right back, y'all, after a word from our sponsor.
Exactly. And I mean, it's practical stuff. And it's stuff that we don't think about. Like you said, we feel like, oh, well, something's wrong with me because I can't do blah, 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 blah. But it's because it's something we haven't dealt with, you know, that we need to handle. And it goes back into our whole psyche and all of that. And I'm really big on mental health. I love talking about it. I think we don't talk about it enough, especially in the Black community. It's always been this stigma about, you know, what it is. And then I think once you know, like, how your family moves by, like my grandmother, you know, she had like several nervous breakdowns. Well, that's something I need to know.
Yeah.
I need to know that so that when life hit me, I know how, you know, I went through these depressive states. Mm-hmm. And I went and got me some help. Like, I see a therapist now, like, I know she like, child, here you come again. I'd rather do that. You know, than to suffer in silence.
You have to. And I always say therapy is a form of self-care.
Exactly.
It's a form of self-care. It's just like you going to the doctor to get your yearly checkup. You need a mental checkup too, sis. You
it's
know.
So important. And I don't know why we don't correlate the two, because I was talking to another licensed therapist and she deals very heavily with the brain. Oh my gosh, she was telling me some stuff. And I was like, girl, wait, draw me a diagram. Wait, hold. It was just so interesting.
Yeah.
How the brain works. And so she said, she was like, we go and get these physicals every year, but we won't go see a therapist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, think back to what I just said about those physical pieces that you feel in your body. We naturally feel stress. We naturally feel anxiety. Hell, right now with all this COVID and craziness of the world, we naturally yes. feel depression.
Exactly. You know?
But, and so you need to get those things checked up on. It is not that anything is wrong. Sometimes you could just go into a therapist and just say, hey, I just need a checkup. And they're going to exactly. know exactly what to do. Okay, well, let's do a checkup then.
Exactly. Exactly. And I notice even with my therapist, sometimes after like so many weeks, she'll say, okay, so it's time. And she'll say that. She was like, so what do we need to check up on? Like, and she'll ask me, and I'm looking at her like, what you talking about? Like, aren't you going to ask me some questions? Like, I mean, what are we doing today? Because she told me, she was like, look, you want to come here and run this session. You can't run this. You're not the boss. You got to let me do my job, which was so funny. Because, Stephanie, we go to these mental therapists, or we'll go to a coach, and we won't even do what they say. We won't even listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We won't even listen, y'all, to what they say. But she'll say, hey, so let me see where you are. And that helps her, you know, with helping me help myself. Sometimes there's no question. She's like, so tell me about X, Y, and Z. And before you know it, the session's over with. And I was like, oh, I took up the whole time with that one question. And mm-hmm. she's like, no, like, that's what I wanted.
How did we get here? But I don't
know.
Yeah. But you need that. You and we all need that. We all need that.
Yes. It's so important. I really love that you do that, that you sow into families and marriages, you know, like that, because again, it helps everybody.
That's one thing that we, you know, we even talk about within our friend group. Like, listen, we turn up, you know, we at each other's house barbecuing, you know, we going on trips together, we doing all this stuff together. But do we cultivate each other's marriages? Do right. we cultivate family. And the one thing we do know, y'all, people getting divorced, you know, and these kids are suffering and these families are suffering. So how often do we talk about relationships? Right. Hell, how often do we talk about sex? You know, exactly. Like, are you doing this? Like, girl, have you tried this out? Having open conversation, I'm serious. But but once again, going back to the relationships, you have to be able to have those close-knit relationships where you can talk to people like that.
Exactly.
And they can call you on your shit and you can call them on theirs.
Exactly. If it ain't right, look tomorrow. Right. I ain't like how that went down, bro. Listen.
My
we
girl,
hold each other accountable.
Hey, Stephanie, you know you being spoiled. Stephanie, right. You know, I'm like, oh, here they go. But they're right. And sometimes you need somebody else to call you out on it. Once again, go to a HBCU because you're going to find some people that don't care nothing about your feelings and going to tell you the truth, sis.
And going to let you know what it is. I think as a culture, we're just like that with each other. I wish we were more so like that with people outside our race sometimes, like we didn't hide that. And mm-hmm. I think those of us that do, we are seen as combative. We're seen as disruptive. You know, all the negative connotations with that. But I think that's so true that, you know, we have to hold each other accountable in all aspects of life. If you say you're my friend, you got to hold me up on everything.
We friends to the end.
Yeah, like we just gonna rock like that and you gonna have to tell me, no, I don't think what you said is cool. Take that off of social media. You know, like you have to have friends that will do that for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
They will do that. So Jabari, you got to tell me, bro, what you do, because I know you just all over the place, sir.
Man, I don't want to even sound like I'm way more than what I am. You know, I'm you know, Jay-Z had a quote once that said, "Men lie, women lie, numbers don't."
Right.
You know, so I'm a guy that kind of digs into the numbers. We typically call it data in our professional terms. So I'm pretty much do a lot of data analytics for Amazon, helping them reduce injuries that happen to different associates that's there, picking your items out of the warehouse, right?
Right.
So let's say a box can fall from up 2 or 3 stories or something. I'm looking at, you know, different data that may indicate what's the root cause of that box falling.
Right.
Hey, should the associate have gotten out of the way instead of trying to catch it? Just a lot of little things that I'm looking at. But so I've kind of focused in on data analytics probably the last 6 to 7 years of my career. 2014, so let's go 6 years. So went up to Harvard, took a 2-day course, and it just really sparked my interest in getting deeper into it.
Uh-huh.
And it's been something that I've got a passion for graphics design. Math was my like favorite subject in school growing up. And a lot of the work that I'm doing is kind of like the marriage of those two things. I'm a visual learner, so I like to kind of communicate visually what I feel is most important to the leaders and to the senior leadership of Amazon. So that's probably my true skill or my niche skill right now. But you know, I've had a great career. I've been at 5 Fortune 500 companies, with this being my 5th one.
Uh-huh.
It's taken me places that I never would have imagined. I always was very ambitious, so I knew, you know, what was inside of me. I knew I wanted to go and do and be, as Dr. Benjamin Mays would say.
Right.
You know, so I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
I love that. Like, that's so cool. Now, wait. I hope ain't nobody got hurt from all them boxes that I be, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Steph, I'm just being real because I need to leave Amazon the lounge bar like for real.
Like, y'all be ordering like, what'd you say, a fingernail clipper.
Yeah.
Like, singing silly stuff. Like, yeah, let me get that.
Yeah, somebody could slip on some shrink wrap in the aisle while they're going to get your fingernail clipped.
Exactly. I'm just like, I just think about it like Amazon. Why you just pop, as we were talking, here come Amazon, popped up, talking about this item that you liked.
No, we not.
They always pop it up in my search.
You see that, right, Stephanie? That's what I'm saying.
I I did not need that, and they popped
and
up.
I have three boxes at my door every day to prove that she's clicking on.
Yeah, I got the clickbait.
You see, he ain't have to put you on blast like that. See, he ain't have to.
I keep them in business.
I know I do. When that little Prime truck show up, and he and I stay upstairs, y'all, he be rolling his eyes. Mm. I'm like, whatever, just go and bring my stuff up here, boo. Just
bring my box. Leave me alone.
You know, at least y'all don't throw the boxes at the door. Man, FedEx be throwing boxes at the door. The post office be throwing boxes. I'm like, I know it's upstairs with you, and I know we're trying to be safe, but do you have to throw my box up against the door?
That is funny.
Everything like, is straight. Everything is, you know, like stressful.
Right. Well, that is so good to hear. I'm super, super proud of all of your accomplishments. So let's talk about y'all both have had or are having very successful careers. How do you think your HBCU experience played into that current success that you're experiencing?
Just the lack of fear, I think, is one thing that's huge. You feel prepared. You have a stronger sense of self when you step into these rooms. To these boardrooms, to wherever you need to, any arena, the way you carry yourself, the way you present yourself, just that level, that confidence. You just know what you've been through. I know, both of us are Greek, so we know, like, we went through a lot of challenges to even become Greek. So it's just feeling kind of, I'm not going to say invincible, but you have a certain sense of, I can get the job done. You know what needs to happen, I promise you I can figure it out. And I think that's the biggest thing that helps me.
Yeah, for me, I go back to support. Like even with starting my own practice here, just knowing people had my back, you know? I can remember, I think posted just like a cute little picture like, hey guys, I'm so excited. I mean, I probably had 50 reposts within 50 minutes. And I was like, dang, wait a minute, what happened? Like, you just know the immense amount of people that's like, they're pushing and supporting you. And I think especially for us in our experience, it wasn't a lot of tearing other people down to put yourself up. Like we really came from that, I can push another person up and I'm still going to be successful. You know, we have kind of that culture and family, you know, that's just like, no, I'm going to keep pushing you no matter what I'm doing. I'm pushing you because you can be great too. And we can both be great. There's room enough for both of us to sit here and eat at this table.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I think that's the biggest thing for me. Like, I of course agree with Jabari saying, but that support that I know is just behind me. You know I'm not going to fall on my face because those people are behind me.
Yeah, I rise, you rise. Yeah. That's definitely the mentality.
And I think that's a good one, guys, because when one wins, we all win. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that is, and I think we're seeing it ever more so now, how we're really banding together. We're really being intentional about supporting Black businesses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And rooting for our sisters and brothers.
Yeah.
That are doing, you know, a lot of things now that we didn't, like, we weren't doing, you know, before. I love it. Like, I love seeing how we're promoting each other. I mm-hmm. love seeing how we just ride for each other. Somebody shared one of my posts the other day. I don't know this person from a can of paint, but mm-hmm. she shared it. It got so many other likes and views. She inboxed me and she was like, I just want to say thank you for providing a platform. Well, we can talk about racism and we are not ashamed. We can say what we want to say and not feel the shame. I was like, you're right. I created a platform for us to be able to do so. If I was waiting on somebody else to do it, then I probably would have been waiting. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was waiting on a white counterpart to talk about these issues and things. But no, we're bringing it to the forefront. We're going to talk about everything that is going on here. And just the fact that I don't even know her. Actually, she's not even in the United States. She's in the UK. And was like, thank you. Like, for even creating a space for people to be able to share, you know, what they want to share, and not feel ashamed at being upset. Like, it's okay to be angry. She's like, I'm a white woman and I'm angry. You know, like, that's I'm angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it makes you feel good that people, you know, think of you that way. And it's ever more so with HBCU. I had Nakia and Ali laughing because I said, my friend, he invited me to his homecoming at Prairie View. And so, you know, again, I graduated from Northwestern. I'm like, okay. He was like, well, look, you're going to need you some comfortable shoes. I'm telling you. And I'm like, okay. Well, I'm like, yeah, you know, wait, Jabari, I wasn't even ready, okay? I'm like, well, it's homecoming, of course, duh. Right. Y'all, when I hit the campus, it was something like I have never seen in my life. Like, it literally brought tears to my eyes to see people just, you know, congregating like that. I get there and I see my sorors and I see my bros, and it don't matter where I came from. I look like them and they embrace me.
I was
wore out, y'all, like literally, okay? I had to go take a nap because that was just too much for your girl, like for real. That was way too much for your girl. But it was just that whole, and I mean, I only got a tidbit of the experience, you know what I'm saying? Like, as a guest, but I felt like I was at home.
Yeah, we get worn out every year for what, last 15 years? I think we only missed one homecoming.
Right.
And that was for the birth of our son. We had our 3-year-old was born on homecoming 2016.
Oh, so my goodness.
On that Saturday, Jabari on Tuesday was
I still thought about trying to do it.
Maybe you can just die. But
Not that way. Try to pull it up.
But then we also, Keisha, I don't know if they told you that, but we also do the Celebration Bowl. So A&T every year typically makes it to the Celebration Bowl. Right. So Jabari and I are the ones, and our group of friends here.
Four-time Celebration Bowl champ, by the way.
But we're the ones that put on the A&T tailgate. So we call it Aggies on the Bluff. And so the Bluff is down in Atlanta. It's pretty funny. But each year has grown and grown. I think this year we had over, 400 Aggies down there. And this is just the tailgate. So this is, everybody's going to the game, but we just put on this one tailgate where everybody know to come across the street, eat, drink, we take a big old picture. But it's our mini homecoming here in Atlanta, you know, because homecoming is so big and it's so many people and you rarely get to see everybody. But Aggies on the Bluff is so special because we're just in one parking lot. And we don't need a lot. We don't need to have a whole bunch of fancy stuff. Give us a parking lot and a DJ and a little barbecue. Girlfriend, let me tell you something. You need to make sure you come. So we were supposed to have it this year, but you know, COVID has come in. And you know.
I know.
But
too much.
But she be playing too much. But you know, that's been our big thing. And we
still ain't canceled it yet. I'm holding out. Yeah, I'm holding out.
No, it's not going to happen. But that was just another example of us just, let me tell you, when I say we come together, we come together.
And we don't leave. You got to pretty much.
Yeah, they put us
nobody
out,
want to leave.
Out of a parking lot. I mean, we are literally in a gravel parking lot. And you cannot tell us we are not at the biggest concert, club, you know, whatever you want to call it, living our best life. Yeah. And it is just some of your most amazing Aggies, most successful Aggies, most loved Aggies, and we just come together like sister and brother, like, hey, what you need?
But you know, Aggies on the Bluff kind of speaks to what we were talking about that richness of relationships, because it really just started from just a real small friend group.
Right.
And then, you know, that was the first year.
It was
then,
like 10 of us.
You know, so one friend told another friend.
A couple of my homies from Charlotte, you know, a couple of their little homies, and we started
pulled the grill out,
and then the next year.
Like, this would have been the sixth edition of Aggies on the Bluff if we did it this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness!
5 years ago, crazy.
Yeah.
See, that's awesome. So you know, I was invited to the next homecoming, y'all. So.
Always invite. It's an open invite.
Yeah, it's an open invite.
Everybody.
Now wear comfortable shoes.
Come to G-Hope.
Yeah, I'm going to have look.
And when I say comfortable shoes, I'm not even just talking tennis shoes. I'm not talking just flats. Like, you got to go.
Exactly.
Them tennis shoes even hurt at 9 o'clock at night. Like, you got to have a real shoe on your foot come home.
Yes, ma'am. Because I wore them Air Force. Oh,
don't wear no flip flops. Don't wear no
little shoes.
You get you some Vapor Maxes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm going to have to, yeah, this time I'm being prepared, you know, because I already know y'all going to have me some everywhere. I already know this yeah. right now.
Yeah.
But yes, babe, I wore them Air Forces. Mm-mm.
Not going to work.
Them shoes cute just to be walking around. They are not cute.
Nope.
To be at no homecoming. No, not one of our homecomings. We just, yeah, that's just like what it is. So I think that is like so awesome. I'll be glad when COVID gone on somewhere and sit down so folks can get back to what they used to doing, you know, mm-hmm. with us. And I love Atlanta. Like, I'm telling y'all, I was in Atlanta at least once a month.
Oh, wow. Like,
for real. I always have events there. Okay. One of my biggest clients is in Atlanta. So I love Atlanta.
Okay, we can have to hit us up next time you're here, definitely.
Yes, I'm like, I'm gonna have to catch a flight. Look, probably mask and all. Just come on and see my peoples down there because I love Atlanta. And I love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so, so cool. So let's talk about your book because I'm so proud of y'all. Like, I'm just so, so proud of y'all. Tell us a little bit about the book. Don't give too much away because I want these folks to go buy the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, the book is dope. I mean, this is the second edition of the A&T part of it. And it is just an amazing establishment. I mean, they have done an amazing job with getting some just amazing people to be in it. But we're just talking about our experience. And from our perspective, our experience is our love story. You know, like, we just have an amazing love story. Like I said, sitting on that front stoop of Curtis Hall one time, I got arrested, and him sitting outside crying with me till, you know, our marriage at A&T. We got married and our reception was at A&T. So we just kind of talk about our love story. Like, yes, we're in love, but the amount of other people that we love too and that love us, that have supported us. And so that's our story. That's our experience with the HBCU. Yes, we can sit here and tell you about all the amazing things we done, and we got this and this accolade and this and that, but it really just go back to the true people that we are. And how God has blessed us and how God ordered our steps. Both of us were supposed to be at two completely different schools. Yeah. And at the very last minute, we're at A&T. And every step since then has been ordered. And every person that has been in our life has been ordered. And it just has been so strategically placed, has strategically helped us in our success. So that's our, I think, from my perspective about the book. What do you think, babe?
No, I think that's our perspective. I think, you know, we just really trying to, at least for the book, just trying to build on a lot of things we told you here. You hear, you know, just some more depth added to that. I think it's, you know, a collection of what, about 60 Aggies that are co-authoring and partnering to get this book out. My thing is, I hope it inspires some high school student or some parents of high school students that can help with making that decision. And just hopefully they'll understand that there's just so much more than the degree that you get from your college institution.
Exactly. Oh, I love it. I so love it. I love anytime that we can talk about our culture and just show how, like, we just dope anyway, y'all. Like, come on, we dope for real. We are dope people, and folks need to know that. But it also helps people in our culture that may not know a lot about our culture really get in tune to it.
That's it.
It really helps them get in tune to it. So I'm just excited about all that y'all are doing, all that y'all have going on. It is so dope to talk with y'all. So tell the listeners how they can get connected to y'all.
So for me, you can find me, Stephanie, the Dope Sex Therapist. I am on IG, and that is the Dope, D-O-P-E, Sex Therapist, all one word, on IG. I'm also on Facebook at Intimacy Center of Georgia. So that is my practice here in Atlanta. So the Intimacy Center of Georgia. I believe that intimacy is the key to all relationships, and that is just not in loving, but in any friendships, sisterhoods, mommyhoods, anything. We all need to be some type of intimacy Intimate. So the Intimacy Center of Georgia. And that is on Facebook. So that's how you can contact me. And I would love to speak with you guys and love to connect with you.
Definitely. What about you, Mr. Jabari?
You can catch me on all the social media outlets. I'm probably a little more out there than my wife.
Yeah, he's way better.
Facebook is JB Walthour. Instagram is Jabari, spelled out with underscores in between every letter. Same thing on Twitter. Got three Instagram accounts that you probably need to go follow. One is, of course, my personal one, but also Book Destined 107. So Stephanie and I started a venture this year where we opened up a vacation rental in Destin, Florida. And so Book Destined 107 gives you the insights into, you know, what we offer there and how to book the house. And it's really a great venture. I really want to create a pipeline for getting more Blacks down to Destin area. Just the experience. I mean, I think we have the best beaches in the country.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just don't even really know about it. But so we wanted to do that. And then the other one is We Run for Brew. At so you can check us out there. I also started a beer running club maybe about 4 years ago with three chapters in three different cities, one in New York, one in Atlanta, and one in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, where we run, you know, about 3 miles. Get some exercise in it, and then come back to the brewery where we take off from and share a beer afterwards, man. So those are the main things that, you know, I'm pushing. And I got a couple other ventures I'm working on as well. So hopefully they'll be ready to go when the book comes out here. So
that is awesome. And you definitely know we're going to stay in touch because all this sound cool. And you know, Destin, that was the first time I saw Blue Water, y'all. So yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah, you know, here in Texas, you know, we got that brown water.
Go ahead and hook it up. Book Destin 107. We still got the holidays open right now.
Yeah, so you can still see your foot once you put it in the water.
Go that's on down there and get a
t-shirt. I'm yes. Yes. Say that again, because baby, they be thinking it's a bomb when they go to Galveston. I'll be like, what? Y'all ain't been to Destin. Y'all ain't seen water till you seen Destin. I'm bragging like I live there, y'all.
Well, you now got some family that's down there. So you be like, oh, y'all gotta go to their house.
Yeah, you gotta come.
Come on, check it out.
Yes, I'm gonna definitely have to do that. I'll keep telling the kids, which, you know, they grown, but still, like, we gotta go to Destin, y'all. We gotta go. Like, for real. It's so nice there. And they've never seen blue water either, except for when we went on our cruise, but that's different. You know, like, this will be really, like, up close and personal and all of that. So yes, definitely we'll put all of your information in the show notes, how they can get connected to you all and about the book and everything. It was just so awesome talking to you both. I'm sure we're going to find something else to talk about and get y'all back on the show again.
Absolutely. Keisha, thank you so much for having us. You know that you are a special gem, and the information and things that you're putting out here, we definitely need. So we appreciate you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all.
Thank you for tuning in to The Convo. I hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to subscribe on Anchor or Apple Podcasts.